Hi there, I'm Hugh Martin, and you're listening to a podcast where nostalgia comes alive. It's Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it.
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy to be with us. Thank you for joining. As always, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, as always, our co-hosts, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingle. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing great. Hello, everybody. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you for asking. Chris, which we have for today.
Today's guest is a puppeteer, writer, and director. Since the early 80s, he has worked on Sesame Street as a puppeteer and now as a director for the show. But some of his other most well-known roles in the puppet world include playing Magellan on Eureka's Castle, Leon on The Puzzle Place, Keiko on Ubi, and of course, Bear on Bear in the Big Blue House. Please welcome Noel McNeil. Noel, happy to have you here.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me. And hi out there in Poddom. Thanks for listening.
Of course. Yes. Glad to have you here.
Yes. Cool. Absolutely glad to have you here. So to kick this off, so could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Let's see. I am many things to many people. First and foremost, I'm a husband and a dad. I've been a son. I am professionally a puppeteer, a writer, a director. I've also been an author, a producer, and I've done many, many things for many, many people for many, many years. And if you grew up in the 90s and watched way too much TV, you probably saw something I did.
Awesome. So what was your childhood like before working as a puppeteer?
Well, basically, I grew up in Central Harlem. I'm a native New Yorker. And my mom raised me. She was a single mom because her husband and my dad walked out on us when I was 18 months old. So she was taking care of me, as well as her mom and her uncle. And we all lived together in the same apartment. And in order to get me through junior high, high school, the choices in the neighborhood were either the high school where the kid got stabbed or the high school where the kid got shot. So she looked into private school and enrolled me in the road school down on 54th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, which was across the street from the Museum of Modern Art. Mm-hmm. So, and then after that, when it came time to pick out a college, I was wondering what to be. And this was during the height of The Muppet Show, because growing up, there were a lot more puppet shows on TV. There was Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Rogers, Sherry Lewis. Paul Winchell had a show, syndicated show called Winchell Mahoney Time, and he was a ventriloquist with Jerry Mahoney and Knucklehead Smith. And Paul Winchell then later on became voice actor for many cartoons of Hanna-Barbera, as well as the original voice of Tigger. And he also co-invented the artificial heart. So
that's
puppeteers
right, yeah.
can save lives. Yes. 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 And so so during the height of the Muppet Show, and I followed, you know, Jim Henson and the Muppets career, starting with Sesame Street. And so I thought, well, if he's doing it, and these people are doing it, maybe I could do it. So I did research the old-fashioned way. I went to the library, which is like Barnes & Noble, but it's free. And I looked up two colleges in the area. One was in Storrs, Connecticut, the University of Connecticut, UConn, in Storrs, Connecticut, which to this day, you can get your master's degree in puppetry. And the other at that time was at Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And at that time, they had a theater department, which included a course in puppetry, which was taught by the designer and builder for Big Bird and Snuffy, Kermit Love. And no, the frog was not named after him. It's just a freaky coincidence. Mm-hmm. And so I did all the research, and now I'm about to present this to again, the single mom who's working two jobs, put me through private school. And so I said, okay, I know what I want to be, a puppeteer. And just braced myself for the reaction. And she looked at me and said, okay, what do we have to do? Oh, okay, well, there's this school and then there's this school. Okay, what do we have to do? Oh, well, this school needs this by this and this school needs that by that. And like, okay, what do we have to do? That's all she kept saying. She never belittled it. She never dismissed it. She never said had a backup plan. But she said, because at that point she'd become a private secretary, having risen the ranks in the steno pool. And she said, I've been typing the same letters for the past 25 years. You can always get a job. So don't get a job. Get a career. And so we filled out everything. And I said, you're really okay with this? And she said, yes. And if for some reason tomorrow you want to become a lumberjack, we'll figure out how to do that. So I had major support from the get-go.
Nice.
That's wonderful. So now your career with puppetry began on the Great Space Coaster, taking on the role of Knock Knock. How did you kind of begin working on that show?
It's because of the fact that the puppets for the Great Space Coaster were designed and built by Kermit's studio. He had his own studio separate from the Muppets. So they built those puppets. And then when John Lovelady, who was the original puppeteer for Knock Knock, left, I auditioned and I got the part, thanks to the fact that Kermit knew me and we needed a puppeteer. So he recommended me. So I got to do that. John Lovelady, by the way, left the show to be the puppeteer on the primetime NBC series, Mr. Smith, which is about an orangutan that gets elected to the US Congress.
Oh, wow.
That's which at the time, back then, this was like, you know, 1983, seemed absolutely ludicrous. By today's standards, it would be welcome.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it would.
Absolutely.
Yes, it would. Certainly an interesting concept, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if you looked on YouTube, you could probably find clips of it.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, yeah.
I'm sure. I mean, yeah. With all those VHS recordings from the 80s, I'm sure we would. So, yeah. So how did working on the Great Space Coaster transition into joining Sesame Street?
Well, Pratt Institute, the theater department, was being phased out when I got my interview. They said that we're phasing out the department. So I was the last one that they were letting in. In fact, for my year, I was like the only one they were being like let in. And so I realized by the time I graduated, I really would be in a class by myself. So the summer, it was like a month just before going back to Pratt for my senior year, Kermit's assistant on Sesame Street quit. And so the job was open. So he asked me, would I be interested? And so a microsecond later, I said, sure. And so I just never went back to Pratt. And so I just went straight to Sesame Street to become the Wrangler, which is the person who preps the puppets and makes sure they're all camera ready, that Big Bird's feathers all nice and groomed down, that Oscar is like, you know, nice shaken and like grubby looking, and any props or rigging that has to be done, that's what I did. And so I got this brand new education in television production because I was going to the penultimate children's show and sitting in on production meetings and just going there, you know, being there 5 days a week working on this. And so that was quite the education. And so no regrets in going from like straight into TV. And that was in the fall of 1982. So I've been associated with Sesame Street for now like 42 years.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yes.
That's great. So some of your most notable roles on Sesame Street was performing a number of Mr. Snuffleupagus's relatives. You got to perform a lot of those. What were those like?
Well, Snuffy is what's called a body puppet. Just like Big Bird is a body puppet. They're not costumes. They're puppets because you can actually animate them the same way you would a smaller version like, you know, Kermit or right. Grover. So they're just bigger. And so Snuffy takes two people. It takes a person in the front to do the mouth and the eyes. And the Snuffle, and then somebody in the back to be the back legs and the back. And so I got to be, you know, the front in order to be Snuffy's mom, Snuffy's dad, Snuffy's uncle, Snuffy's mailman, Snuffy's grandmother, Snuffy's personal trainer, Arnold Snuffleupagus, which you can see on YouTube.
That's funny.
Yeah, and it's you have a monitor that's strapped to the inside of Snuffy. So this way, what you saw at home is what I saw. That's the only way you could really see out, other than opening the mouth but looking straight down at the floor. So you really can't see ahead of you. So, but it was always fun and warm, but fun.
That's great.
Awesome. So I'm kind of curious, who were some of your favorite celebrity guests to work with on Sesame?
Oh yeah, we had a lot. One of the first ones that I always say was like the nicest was comedian John Candy, who was from SCTV and Uncle Buck, and from he's the guy that Catherine O'Hara meets trying to get back home to Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, and he came on as this character from SCTV, Josh Schmenge of the Schmenge Brothers. So it's a sort of polka accordion playing character, and he was truly one of like the nicest guys. Once he was done, because we broke for lunch and his bit was done, so he could leave, and so we were going to lunch, and he's like, it's like, oh, where are you guys going? And we're like, well, there's this Italian place across the street. He was like, oh, like, do you mind if I come? We're like, no, of course not, sure. So we got across the street, and he ended up treating us for lunch, which was really nice. And at the end, we were heading back into the studio. His car was there to take him back to his hotel. And he hugged Carol Spinney. He hugged Debbie Spinney, Carol's wife. And then he hugged me, which was so nice. And he didn't have to, but he was just genuinely a really sweet guy. And plus, he actually got to work with the Muppets because he was at the end of the Sesame Street movie, Follow That Bird. And he plays the motorcycle cop who pulls over the two villains. But that's the only scene he's in. And there's no Muppets. So he always felt disappointed that he was in this movie, but never actually worked with any of the Sesame Street Muppets. So finally, he got to do it, which was really nice. He was really good.
That's wonderful. Another celebrity bit I really like that you worked with was a number with Patti LaBelle, the Gospel Alphabet.
Yes. Yes, the infamous story that I've told more than once, yes. That you could all check out on YouTube. But yes. So it's like, yes. It's right. She was great. Actually, I had worked with her, Peter Lintz and I had worked with her before on the Puzzle Place direct-to-video special and the holiday special.
Oh, yes.
And, and it was a wraparounds for the holiday episode we did, but they did wraparounds out in Long Island. And so at the very, very end, that's when she came and we all crammed into this sleigh and against Chroma Key. And she was singing, I think, Jingle Bells. And we were like bopping along with her. So then she came on Sesame Street to sing the alphabet. And again, you can watch this on YouTube. And so she's up on a platform. And so she's next to little Chrissy, named after Chris Cerf, this marvelous music director.
Oh, I love Chris. Love Chris Cerf. Yes.
Yes. Who also voiced little Chrissy, which was great. Mm-hmm. And so as she's singing, the Sesame Street characters gather in around her. And it's very tight because, you know, it's like, it's not widescreen. You got to be like tight. And, you know, she's right in the middle. And so there are monitors on the floor, but you really can't like move too much. You just have your arm up in the air. And I have Bert. And so after she sings the slow version comes the gospel breakout dance version where all the characters are bopping. And I'm like having Bert dance. And I look down at the monitor and I suddenly notice one of Bert's eyes is missing. And that's because next to Bert is the Count. And the Count has that pointy collar. And the collar got right behind Bert's left eye and flicked it off. Yeah. So suddenly now, Bert has to dance in profile. But then, of course, at the very end, everybody has to look at Patty for that final note. And so just as he sings it, Bert whips around really quick. So you don't see, you go from profile to back of head in half a second. And then just like laughing and all that and just like back into profile. So then they play it back because they always played it back. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking and then suddenly I noticed that the eye's gone and suddenly I'm doing profile. Nobody else does. And so whenever it was good, they would say, that's a bye. And they said, that's a bye. And I was like, no. And I just very slowly just held up Bert and they saw that he was suddenly this cyclops and the gasp. And everybody was just like, don't move. It just like looked down. They found the eye. And so what they did, that take was great. It was like perfect. So to save it, we did what's called pickups. And so we did these shots of clusters of characters dancing that got inserted into the master shot. And so that's why you suddenly see cutaways of like characters dancing and then back to the wide shot with Petty in order to save it. But you can still see when Bert whips around and then in order to, you know, not show that he's just lost an eye, which by the way was double stuck onto his eye, which always to this day is like, why is his eyes double stuck on? It's not like you're going to use this puppet for anything else. It's Bert.
Right.
Glue the eyes on.
Right.
Exactly. So earlier you briefly mentioned Follow That Bird. Can you share any memories from working on Follow That Bird?
Yeah, we did it in Canada, just outside of Toronto. And so it was great. It was the summer of 1984. So it was 40 years ago this coming summer, because it came out the following year, 1985. And we stayed in the Royal York Hotel, which was this grand old train station. In fact, the largest hotel in North America, at least for at that time. And it was because of the railroad station across the street. And so it was great. And we got to be there like all summer. And so Toronto's beautiful. I love Toronto. It's a beautiful city. And we had celebrity guests like Waylon Jennings, who became very close friends with Carol and Debbie Spinney. I also got to be the wrangler again, taking care of Big Bird. But I also got to be Big Bird's like double. So whenever, in stand-in, so when setting up the shots, I would do it. And then, you know, if Big Bird needed to be chased by a helicopter, sometimes that was me. And so I also got to have my own character, which was a character named Madam Chairbird. So she starts the movie by being the leader of this do-gooder society called the Feathered Friends, who try to put birds in nice bird families. And so they realize there's this case about this bird that lives on a place called Sesame Street with all these humans, but he really should be with a bird family. And so that kind of sets it up with this do-gooder named Miss Finch, who's like the social worker who places Big Bird in the family, the Dodos. And then when Big Bird doesn't like it and runs away, she's trying to find him to take him back to the Dodos. His friends from Sesame Street are trying to find him to take him back to Sesame Street. And meanwhile, there are these two villains, the Sleaze Brothers, who want to capture him and have him be part of their circus sideshow. And even paint him blue to become the Bluebird of Happiness. So it's like, but yeah, but it was it's a really great movie. By the way,
here's the cat. Yes, it is.
This is Lola. Lola, this is the boys. Hi guys, there you go. Okay, go. In case you hear any yowling later, that's because of her. So it's like, off with you.
That's okay.
Follow that bird's amazing.
Really, it still holds up. It's because of Tony Geis and Judy Friedberg who wrote it. And it still holds up. It's all about, you know, a family is people who love you. Like, that's it. And that's exactly. It. And what's nice is at the end, when Miss Finch comes to collect Big Bird, because he's finally made it back to Sesame Street, she wants to take him back. And Maria says, like, he has a family here, and not just birds, but all kinds. And then they do this 360-degree move with the camera to see everybody that's on Sesame Street, Muppets and humans. Well, they didn't hire enough extras that day. So suddenly we all have to be in the shot to like fill the frame. So when Maria says we have all kinds, we have birds, we have cows, we have monsters. And then, you know, I'm looking at the screen thinking, yeah, we have carpenters, we have prop masters, we have lighting directors,
yeah.
we have Noel, we have Noel's mom, we have Debbie Spinney, the wife of Big Bird. We've got, so it's like all these people. So it was an unintentional but great tribute to all the people who actually made the movie are actually part of this grand finale scene.
That's wonderful.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So speaking of international, for years you've traveled to various countries training puppeteers for the international co-productions of Sesame Street. And there are a ton of them, people.
Yes.
Could you share any of your experiences from training these puppeteers?
Yes, because pretty much of all the puppeteers that I've trained, none of them have really been puppeteers previously. It's always been sort of actors who've been trained into doing it. I remember when I was asked to go to Japan to help audition and train the new revised Japanese version of Sesame Street. They had puppeteers come in, like Bunraku puppeteers, these older gentlemen. But we have to show people how to do monitor puppetry, the kind that, you know, Jim did and that we all learned from. And it really is that saying, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, because these gentlemen just didn't get it. But the actors, the non-puppeteers, did. There was the Nigerian version of Sesame Square. And I was auditioning puppeteers. In fact, rehearsal space is very like at a premium there. So we were actually doing it in the lobby of the building of the production office, and they set up like mirrors. And so I remember there was this one young lady who just had this like sort of like attitude, like almost like being at a club and there's nobody to talk to and the music sucks and just like, why did I bother coming? And so I had people go through the exercises with their bare hands, and she did it with like her hand on her hip, and it was like, okay, this won't last long. And then I handed out the puppets so that they could get used to the puppets and then have their turn with the mirror. So one group was already at the mirror, but I told them, here's a puppet, just get used to having it on your hand. And when I look back, Miss Attitude is actually talking very quietly to the puppet, and the puppet very quietly talking back to her, having this little conversation. And suddenly that's when I just knew, like, yeah, it's like she could actually do this. And she ended up actually getting the part. It was like two puppet characters, a male and female character. She got the female lead, because you just never know. And that's the other thing. You could have like the greatest puppeteer since Frank Oz, like in that group. And with like, you know, 6 to 8 months of training, they could be ready. But I don't have that amount of time. You never do. You have usually like that moment. And then you would have like maybe 2, maybe 3 days to rehearse with these people and train them. And then bye. And then they would have to like practice and send tapes back for critiquing. So you really have to make sort of like a judgment call and see like the potential that's there. But yeah, I've been to Nigeria, I've been to South Africa, I've been to Japan, been to Mexico, to India, to Pakistan, to Palestine, to Jordan. Yeah, it's been amazing. And it really is great, because not only did I get to be part of like the extending legacy of Sesame Street, and I always told the puppeteers that I auditioned and trained, like, you're now part of this incredible legacy. But it's also just being exposed to so many different cultures and so many different people and how they live. And it's just, that's one of like the most gratifying things that I take away from this. And I'm still in contact with so many of the puppeteers and the producers and writers that I got introduced to.
That's awesome. And yeah, of course, you're now directing Sesame, which is really awesome. And you know, and recently you kind of recently done some Macy's Thanksgiving Day parades for Big Bird, which that was really awesome.
Yeah, I get to, my joke is with being Big Bird for the Thanksgiving Day parade. I always joke I get to be a Big Bird before I go home to eat a Big Bird.
I like, yeah,
exactly.
Essentially,
it's true.
Moving on from Sesame, you also got to play Magellan on the Nick Jr. series, Eureka's Castle. What's it kind of like for you getting to perform more lead characters like Magellan?
Magellan was my first like lead character of a series, and because he's puppeteered in the same style as Big Bird, I was able to do it because Carol was not only a mentor but a very dear friend, and I learned everything about body puppetry from him. And so Magellan was great because you would put my right arm up through the neck into his head, and then my left arm would be in his left arm, and then you could have somebody be his right hand and then somebody be his tail. So there were moments when there was, you know, like three of us having this character come to life. The other characters were hand puppets. And in order for Magellan to be bigger, taller than the other characters, everybody stood on the floor with their arms up over their head, and the set was raised up. So I was on these risers, these platforms that were linked together in like, you know, runway style, and with these boards on the side so that I could feel them with my feet and not tumble over and like, you know, crush my coworkers.
Yeah, another amazing show. I absolutely love the Christmas special, Christmas at Eureka's Castle.
Oh yeah, Christmas at Eureka's special. Castle.
Yes.
So wonderful.
Yeah, I got to co-write it with Jim Krupa and Brian Meehl, who were the puppeteers on the show, with our head writer, Jovial Bob Stein, who went on to become R.L. Stein,
yes,
the creator of those mm-hmm. Goosebumps series and things like that. And I hear he's done well by that. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Quite well.
Very well indeed. So,
yeah, I think you can see Christmas on Eureka's Castle on YouTube.
So, yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah.
YouTube. YouTube's like the video junk drawer of the world. You can just like type in almost anything, and somehow somebody has it up on YouTube. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that special. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Eureka's Castle is now on Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is, the first season. And it's the nice, neat half-hour versions of it. And what was great about Eureka was that there was really no curriculum. It wasn't like Sesame Street. It was just a bunch of, like, silly little skits and bits, which was so it was just, like, fun in terms of, like, you didn't have to worry about, you know, what the lesson of the day was. So the first year I just puppeteered, but for the second year I became a writer for the show.
Nice.
Which was great.
Absolutely. So another lead character you got to perform was Leon on the Puzzle Place, which of course had a very diverse group of characters. What are your thoughts kind of about the show's lessons about diversity and representation? Because there were a lot of wonderful episodes on that show.
Yeah, it's almost like the Puzzle Place could actually like just air now. You could probably just air those episodes and they would still hold up, especially, you know, in the Puzzle Place, this grand clubhouse that these kids would all like come together and play at was this ginormous screen, this kind of like computer-like screen called the Weebus. And whenever they wanted to call each other or call an expert on something, they would say, Weebus, please call. And it would pop up. So before Zoom, there was the Weebus, which is why, again, you could probably just air this right now and kids would just think of it as a Zoom call. And not just something like this weird kind of like thing. So, but yeah, we shot it in Los Angeles at KTLA Los Angeles in the summer of 1984. Oh, no, not summer. It was actually from like late winter through spring into summer of 1984, so 30 years ago. Wow, we're really going back here. And it premiered in January of 1985. And it was myself, Peter Lintz, Jim Martin, Allison Mork, season one, and then Stephanie DeBruzzo, season two. Alice Dineen and Common Osborn. And we played these very diverse characters who would, from different parts of the country, who would come somehow magically to this clubhouse and hang out and learn lessons about tolerance and respect and also have fun. So the first season, again, I was just a puppeteer, but for the second and third season, I became a writer for the show.
Yeah, you wrote a lot of wonderful episodes of that show too.
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Yes. Yeah, that was there was that one. There's one I put up on YouTube. It's The Mystery of the Fabulous Hat.
Yes.
It's the one with Leon trying to beat Sherlock Holmes and his friend Ben being coerced into being Dr. Watson. And then when Ben does a better job of finding clues, Leon fires him. But then Leon realizes that he can't do this by himself and wonders what he can do. And so that's when he goes to the Weebus and says, "Weebus, please call the chief of the Acme Detective Agency." And at that time, the chief of the Acme Detective Agency was a character on another PBS show called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? And was played by an actress named Lynn Thigpen.
Yes.
So before Lynn and I talked as Bear and Luna, there was this conversation with Lynn's chief and my Leon.
That's right. Yeah.
And when we got to know each other, I reminded her of it and she totally remembered doing it.
Yeah. And then she also got to be on Sesame Street too.
Lynn was a great character actress. She was on Sesame Street. She did Broadway. She was in movies. She's the voice of the DJ in the classic movie, The Warriors. You never see her face, but you just hear her voice. And she told me how, you know, she was there for about 3 to 4 hours and just like talking. And then like, that was it. It was like a day's work. It was like, that's it. And then she was also on the daytime drama All My Children. And so she was a consummate actress. She was really good, as well as a very, very dear person.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. So speaking of respect, I'm going to give you a little bit of a deep cut. Leon also got to appear on the special Kids for Character. We're going way back to 1996 on this one. Because you want to talk about a crossover, people. Like, it was insane. You had Barney, you had The Puzzle Place, you had Lamb Chop, you had The Magic School Bus, all these shows coming together. And, there's one other one that I know, Chris, you have the tape. I did not know about the back cover. And I'm forgetting the name of the show now. Something Storytime. Kino Storytime, I think it was.
Yes.
Which was also on PBS in the 90s. Yeah. And there's this really cool scene I've seen many times with Leon and Julie and Barney and Baby Bob and BJ. Something you just never see. Like, it's really fascinating. Could you talk a bit about Kids for Character?
Yeah, it's like, I actually barely remember it. But yeah, it's just like, it was one of those things where they just had all these like characters like come together for this cause. And I remember like one of the chief humans was Tom Selleck.
That's right.
And then we shot it. The actual video was shot at Universal Studios Florida and this grand like street scene. And so it was like Leon and Julie, played by Alice Dineen. But then we also were like with Barney and Baby Bob. So I have this picture of like this behind the scene picture of like Barney and Leon and together. And I had this control with Leon's like eyes, and I'm having him like bulge his eyes and like shock that he's like like next
talking
to Barney.
This big purple dinosaur.
Like, huge.
Oh my gosh. Hello. But that was like the first crossover. Then the next time there was a big crossover was We Are Family that Niles Rodgers put together.
Yes, love that one too. Yes.
Which was after 9/11. He had like human celebrities come together after 9/11. And then for the 6 month anniversary, there was a version for kids. And so they had the crossover from all the kid shows at the time, which included Bear. So there were moments where a lot of the characters were on each other's show. So it was such a great moment for me that I got to have Bear like be on Sesame Street and Tutter too, next to Big Bird and Snuffy. These guys are used to like, you know, wrangle. And Bear is a, you know, is big, you know, he's like, you know, he's a bear standing upright. But next to Snuffy and Big Bird, he's like a teddy bear next to these characters. Because suddenly he seems just so short and so little.
Yeah.
But it was really, fun. It was great. And then for making it available to schools, they put it on a DVD and VHS. And so I got to write the script for it where Barney and Bear are driving up to the school to drop it off.
Yes, a FedEx truck and then go to the school and everything.
Yeah,
that's
it out. Yes.
That's such a little neat thing.
Yeah, you, exactly.
Kerry Stinson did that.
Yeah, and then we did a little meet and greet with kids afterwards in the auditorium. And the kids were just like, oh my gosh. like, they could not believe, like, talk about worlds colliding. It was just like, it was like funny. At the end, it was like, I thought it'd be nice at the end. As you see the truck driving off, you hear Bear and Barney. And I thought, oh, you know, it'd be really fun to have like Barney say, you know, it's like, by the way, Bear, you smell really good. And Bear says, oh, Barney, I love you. And just like, well, we had to cut that because apparently some folks at FedEx thought it was too suggestive.
Yeah.
And so it was cut. It's like, you know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. That was fun.
Yes, absolutely. So, and speaking of Bear, of course, you know, one of your best known roles in the puppet world was getting to play Bear on Bear in the Big Blue House. Can you kind of describe how the show came to be and kind of like the audition process?
Well, it's like, it's kind of, in terms of like the story, it's kind of like, the length it took to explain How I Met Your Mother, because it's over a course of a couple of years that it came to be. First of all, there was this guy, Jim Henson, and Jim decided that he wanted his characters to live on after he eventually like died, whenever that would be. And so he struck a deal with the Walt Disney Company, and he knew Michael Eisner. They were friends from back when Michael Eisner was with ABC. And so they did this deal where Disney would buy the Muppets. Then, unfortunately, Jim died. And so that's when the deal got restructured and amended so that the Henson Company would still keep the Muppets, but they would develop three shows for Disney. One was a primetime series. The first one was called Dinosaurs. And that was the first show they developed under the deal. A couple of years later, the second show was a show called Alien in the Family. And it was about an earthling who marries an alien. And so it was kind of like an sort of a extraterrestrial version of the Brady Bunch, where the human kids and the alien kids are blended into this family. And in order to make that work, the baby alien, played by Dave Rudman, they had the set on this huge platform, so everything was raised up. So then that got canceled. And they put everything in storage, including the raised platform, put a pin in that. And so then they would do one more show. And rather than do something for primetime, they thought, let's do it for the new children's outlet of the Disney Channel, which was going to be called Playhouse Disney. And so they hired Mitchell Kriegman, and Mitchell was responsible for the show Clarissa Explains It All for Nickelodeon. So they hired him. And so he, as I was told, went through like the files and the drawers of Henson and see what ideas were there that hadn't been fully fleshed out and developed. And he saw this one, the sketch of this house with this bear. And originally the house was sort of a sentient being, like the house could like talk and all that. But he decided to focus on like this bear character, and then developed the other characters that Bear would be friends with, and that Bear would be the adult, and these other characters would represent the kids at home. And so they had auditions for it, and I got called in. And as soon as I walked in, executive Peter Van Roden at the time said to me right away, use your own voice. And I was like, what? It's like, we're the Muppets. We don't do that. And he was like, yes, but we just want Bear to have just a calming, normal voice. To contrast another very large character who did not have that kind of voice, who I mentioned previously.
Yeah.
Right. So then I would like try and sneak in and no. So then I got into when I was inside, it was kind of like the Helix. So it was like the underbody of Bear without the fur. It's just where I could see out. And there was a foam head and I could like manipulate it. And there was a camera and a big, large TV set, a monitor, so I could see what I was doing. And it felt really good. Even just like this sort of prototype, it's like, it felt really good. And then I thought, wait a minute, no, it's Friday. It's 4:45. They called you in the last minute because they already picked out who they want. And they just want to, you know, make sure they made the right decision. So I said, whatever. I'm just going to have fun, knowing that I wasn't going to get this. So then that's when, you know, I was like running around and I was like jumping. And then one part of the script, it said that Bear sniffs the camera and realizes it's the viewer. And so that's when I just jammed the nose all the way into the lens and then pulled it back and like jammed it in again and just like had fun. And then I just like, as we all should do with auditions, I said thank you and completely forgot about it until that Monday when around 6 o'clock I got a call from Henson saying, we want you to be Bear. And the rest, as they say,
is history.
History. Yes.
So
exactly.
Yes.
Love Bear. I mean, it was one of the first shows I ever saw, like ever, at least what I was told.
You got quite the collection back behind you too. I see like, it's like,
stuff. Yeah.
Bear and Washington. So,
I'm kind of curious, were there any specific storylines or episodes on Bear you got to do that you're kind of, that you're most proud of?
I got to, again, for the first season, I was the puppeteer, and the second season, I became a writer for the show. So there was ones that I wrote that I particularly liked. There was the one where it's called Wait For Me, and it was all about being patient and just like waiting. Another script that I didn't write but I really liked was the potty episode, which
classic,
was so popular on Amazon, and like now people could like use it, and it was like one of those things where, you know, Bear at the beginning said to the crew, it's like, okay, the next 3 days, you're going to hear the following words: poop, pee, potty, diaper, wipe. So get all the jokes out of your system now. And now we can proceed.
Yes. There's so many wonderful episodes. And to all, good night. This is your live Bear, Bear's Birthday Bash. Yeah. And one episode that would be Gopher was actually the character, the Great Bandini. And of course, a Christmas special, a Bear, Bear Christmas. There's so many wonderful episodes.
Yeah, it was like it was a really special series. We really had a good time because it was like the first time that me, Peter, Tyler Bunch, Vicky Eibner, Jim Krupa, we got to create like brand new Muppet characters, because Bear and his friends are Muppets. They're not the Muppets, but they are Muppets. They are part of the Muppet-verse. And so, because people have asked me, he's like, does Bear know Kermit? And I would say Bear knows of Kermit the way I know of George Clooney. but I've never met him. But Kermit and the Muppets are these celebrities within this Muppet universe. So Bear would know of them, but he just has never met them. So,
right.
Absolutely. There really were a lot of wonderful episodes. I was going to mention All Good Night to you. Beat me to it, Jake. Thanks.
Horses.
So you also got to sing a lot of truly amazing songs as Bear on the show. Do you have any favorites in particular?
There's the song Love. Where is the exact title of this? It was just like Love is the most amazing thing. It was that one.
Yeah. Okay.
There's the song Picture This, which is just very sweet. There's That's My Name, which was like just adorable.
Yeah, that's a great one
with the kids. And then I got to co-write a song for the show. I wrote the lyrics, and Peter Lurie and I came up with the melody, and it's called Come On In, and it's pretty much the entire synopsis of the show in this song from like beginning to end. And so it was used as and became part of what we called the cycle songs, where you would have a song that you could just easily just like drop into an episode. So yeah, in order to help push the plot along or fill time. So come on in, you know, clean up the house, brush, breathe.
Cha-cha-cha.
Yeah, it's just like throw that in there.
Song.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, wonderful songs.
Right. And then of course, the you know, like of all the songs, there's that song that Bear and Luna would sing at the end of every episode, which is like the most beautiful, saddest song for a children's show ever. But it's just gorgeous. It's just great. Peter's also responsible. He also wrote the theme for the original series, The Magic School Bus. So Peter Lurie, and he was also the music director on Eureka's Castle. So he's done a lot. His current project has nothing to do with puppets or kids. He did the music for MacGyver the Musical, and the album is available online, and it's great.
That's wonderful. So we're going to have a special guest hopping in here. He may be familiar to you, and here he is. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome DJ Bob Runkel.
Ah!
Bob.
How you doing, Bob?
Well,
hello, Ben.
It's been a while.
Hey, Bob.
When was the last time I talked to you? No, it's been a long time.
I was like, I guess some point last year, or in like, okay, but not on your podcast. I think just in general. But yeah, it's been a while. It's like
thought I catch up.
You've been a busy guy.
Yeah.
Hi. you've been racking up the guests on your podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, he has.
Going on our 14th year. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yes.
Kudos.
Kudos indeed.
Who's some of the guests you've had, Bob?
Oh my gosh. Just this past week, Nate Spiegel and I interviewed a comedian who was on Craig Ferguson. His name is Josh Robert Thompson, and we kind of collaborated on that. That was an hour and 45 minutes extravaganza.
Wow. That's called part one and part two.
Yeah.
well, if it's any consolation, I asked Nate if we should do a part one and part two, and he's like, no, keep it all in.
That sounds like Nate.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
And you also had on Mr. Hugh Martin, the director.
Yeah.
Yes, we had him on too.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did as well. Love Hugh so much. He's just the best.
He's a jerk.
It's finally coming out now. You know, this whole persona, this nice guy, it's an act.
Man.
Yeah, Hugh directed all the episodes of Eureka's Castle, both here in New York and then when we went to Orlando, Florida, and also shot the Christmas special, as well as two other specials, Don't Look Under the Bed and Another one.
And of course, a lot, most of the episodes for season one of Bear, too.
Yeah.
So we did one more with, especially with Luther Vandross, but forget the name of it.
I'm trying to remember. Don't touch that box.
Don't touch that box. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I had to dig in my Rolodex.
Yeah. I know. He
was like,
I know,
what
I
was
too.
It called? Yeah. So, yes, called? we did those three specials plus the second half of season two down in Orlando, which was quite the experience. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah, and they're going back a bit to Bear episodes. I also like the birthday episodes.
Which one? Oh yeah,
there were a few of them.
Bash. Yeah.
When in doubt, celebrate somebody's birthday. You know.
Yeah.
Yes. Whose birthday is it today?
Yes.
Grandma Flutter's 100th birthday.
Grandma Flutter's 100th.
Yeah, that was different because you don't really talk about grandparents like aging
right
on Kick TV.
It was our way of celebrating the 100th episode of Bear. So that's why
we had
it be 100 years. But we did do an episode about grandparents. That was Grandma Etta and Grandpa Otto, played by Vicky and Jim Krupa, which was great. And that's another great song. Your grandma and grandpa.
It's a really
sweet, cute song about grandparents. Yeah, because you really don't. Because that was the one nice thing about Bear was that he was an adult. He was an adult character because so many kids shows the lead characters are kids, but Bear was an adult, so it was great when he would like make appearances on things like Hollywood Squares, and he could be, you know, a little bit more cheeky, a little more of a wink.
Kind of goes slightly off the rails a little bit when appearances.
Yeah, it was just a very gentle, like little wink, and like And Bear also, he would come in and like the living room would be a complete disaster thanks to Pip and Pop, and you know he would occasionally do these asides to the camera with that look of like, you know what I'm going through. And if someone online actually commented how much they appreciated like that sort of like Bear breaking the fourth wall for parents of like, I know what you're feeling right now.
And he even said, haven't you been through this too? Like there are times where he looked the camera addressed it.
That's what made Bear so great, because it resonates with kids and parents. And there's not a lot of kids shows that kind of do that.
Yeah.
No. The latest one is Bluey now on Disney Plus.
Oh, so I love Bluey. Bluey.
It's enjoyable for parents too. So it's like, So but before that there was Bear. And actually it's funny, like on the listing on Disney Plus, they'll have Disney Junior will have like, you know, Bluey, and then right next to Bluey is Bear, and then you just like keep swiping over. But so it's just like So it's very funny.
Oh yes. Yeah, I love where Bear doing kind of some like appearances and like in talk shows and even Walt Disney World, Christmas Day Parade. And you know, and Breakfast with Bear is kind of a neat little, you know, show. And of course now Bear is now on Disney Plus.
Yes. Awesome. Finally. Yes.
He's finally.
I mean, for so many years people would like, you know, tweet me on like Twitter. Just like, it's like they should put Bear on. It's like you should tell them to put Bear on. It's like Bear should be back on. It was like, you know, it was just like adorable because you think that I actually have all this power at my disposal. Because, you know, if it were up to me, it never would have left the air. But thank you so much that I should just call Disney and say, hey, put it on. And then, you know, Bear's now on Disney Plus. But apparently there's like 7 episodes missing. So now I'm getting tweets about like, it's like, where are the episodes, Noel? It's like, they should put those episodes on. They're missing like this, and this.
Yeah.
And it's like, again.
One of the weirder ones they're missing is the second part of the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it's like they should put those on. It's like, yes. Yes, they should. Thank you for writing.
Right.
I didn't bug you about it. I was the one that told you about it.
Yeah, exactly. No, yes. Yeah. Exactly. So it's just like, no. So and to date, they still haven't put it on. Why? Again, folks, I don't
don't know.
It's not like there's music rights issues. There was no Bear didn't do any covers of anything.
No, exactly. Not really. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, because one of the reasons why it took so long was because they had to transfer the original, you know, series that you know, was 1997 into like 4K, like, you know, digitize it. But not only visually, but also the audio. They had to go back and also update all of the audio. And then not just for the English audio, but for all the translated languages out there that are now watching Bear.
There were a lot of episodes of Bear, too. There were like 117 or 18.
Episodes.
How many, Bob? How many exactly?
They're right.
There you go.
Anyone would know it's Bob. I have no memory.
Yeah.
People would ask me, like, "Oh, it's like, oh, I love this song. I love this episode."
Yeah,
that's great. Right. I have no memory.
Garbage memory.
Garbage memory.
Bob, like Bob's out the knows it. He knows it.
Yes.
Oh yes, it's like. It's like I've been on this show way too many times, so he's heard the same stories over and over again.
Well,
so.
you got to come back. You got to talk about Little Shop.
Yes, the other thing, I've been like dabbling in the world of theater. I'm the swing puppeteer and swing voice for the plant Audrey 2 for Off-Broadway's Little Shop of Horrors, so which is currently... Our current Seymour is Darren Criss, and our current Audrey is Evan Rachel Wood. And they are fantastic. Not only great performers, but just wonderful people. It's so much fun to hang out with. So if you're in New York, between now and the end of March, you can come and see Darren and Evan in Off-Broadway's Little Shop of Horrors.
I think some of them grew up watching you.
Well, when I started at Little Shop in October of 2022, and at that time the Seymour was actor Rob McClure, who has been in Broadway's Beetlejuice, and he originated the role of Mrs. Doubtfire, which he's on tour right now, and won and got a Tony nomination for it. So he was the current Seymour when I came in, and so he's done theater and he's so incredibly talented. He was fanboying over me when he found out who I was and what I did, in particular how he grew up watching Eureka's Castle and that I was Magellan, and he could not believe it. So for his going away present, I had one of those little Magellan rubber Pizza Hut toys.
Oh,
and I gave it to him, and the man nearly cried. He just loved it.
There you go, picture of him nearly on his knees.
Good. Yes. Yes. It's like, it's great. He's just like wonderful. And Rob is like such a great guy. He's like one of the nicest performers that I've met. Yeah. But it is funny that, you know, this Broadway star was like fanboying over me. So
that's great.
Oh, that's great.
I feel like a proud dad around these guys.
Yeah. That feels weird.
He'll have notes for you, don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. So going back to Disney for a moment, you were working on the Book of Pooh puppeteering Rabbit, which you had brought up tabletop puppetry earlier. Could you kind of talk about working with tabletop as opposed to Muppet-style puppetry?
Yeah, it's a tabletop, or in Japan it's called Bunraku. And so it's a team of puppeteers to bring one character to life. And so traditionally there'd be a puppeteer to do the head, and then there'd be another puppeteer to do, in Japan, like the right hand and right arm, and another puppeteer for the left hand, left arm, and then people for the feet. And you could be doing this as a team for years. It's like... And so for the Book of Pooh, it was against a green screen. And so we all wore these green smocks and green hoods and green gloves. And the 100-acre wood was virtual and projected so that we could see it on the monitors, even though behind us we was like all green and the tables were green. But if you look to the monitor, they were standing on the ground and in front of Pooh's house, and I was Rabbit. And so I did the head and I held the body of Rabbit, and Paul McGinnis did the arms of Rabbit, which had these great little triggers for flicking his wrists. And Matt Brooks, who designed and built Rabbit, did the feet. And so we were, you know, Team Rabbit. I wasn't the voice.
Right.
None of us were the voices of the characters, because they did a test with Pooh, Piglet, and Tigger. One with the puppeteers doing the voices, and then one with the known animated voiceover artists dubbing in. And they showed both versions to kids. Kids didn't care. They wanted to see more and wondered where, you know, the other characters were. When they showed it to parents, particularly moms who buy the products, the mom said, "Oh, that's not how I remember Pooh sounding when I was little." And so that's why the voiceover guys got to do it, and we just lip-synced along. But occasionally, if we added a line, then they would have to go back and dub in what we had said. The best part of the Book of Pooh was meeting all these incredible puppeteers I'm still friends with. Matt Brooks, Paul McGinnis, Amanda Maddox, Jen Barnhart, James Godwin, Robin Howard.
I love Jen, James.
Yes. A lot of wonderful names.
Yes. It's just like, and it's like, because of this show, I've met these people, and I'm still like friends with all these people, love these people. So that was the best part of the Book of Pooh, was meeting all the, and all these, and all these people had never done like real TV puppetry before. So this was their intro into like TV puppetry and using a monitor, because they primarily done like theater. So me, Tyler, Peter, and Eric Jacobson were like the principals for Pooh, Rabbit, Tigger, and Piglet. And so so that's why we were the heads and all that, because we knew monitor puppetry. But Bear was still like still being shown, and I would still do appearances every now and then to promote the show. So I would leave. And so that's when Paul McGinnis would get a chance to do the head of Rabbit. And then even Matt Brooks got a chance. And Matt always thanked me for the fact that I trusted them with this character and let them do it. I said, of course, that's how you go to, that's the only way you go to learn is by doing it. So just like do it. You know, pick a show that's not like challenging or anything, but it's like if Rabbit's there and he's standing and he's listening and it does a reaction, like, yeah, try it, do it. And so, yeah, it was great. So got a whole new crop of like TV puppeteers, which was wonderful.
Yes. Also, yeah, Book of Pooh, one for series. So now,
also on Disney Plus.
Yes.
Yes.
In its entirety.
Yes. There are no missing episodes.
No episodes missing on that one.
All episodes actually on there. But how about Bear? No.
Shut up. Because of that, we're taking five more off.
Right. We went through this discussion earlier, Jake.
I know.
So, now all we need is Breakfast with Bear on Disney Plus. That would be great.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
Oh, yes. I don't know. You never know.
But that's also on YouTube. I think occasionally you can see some of those. And that was great. It was like the unofficial spinoff of Bear. Mm-hmm. It was like wraparounds for a block of shows that were on from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. But Bear would be in the real world with real kids in their real homes. And so we did something like a bunch in New York, and then another bunch in California, in Los Angeles area. One was in Fort Irwin, the military base in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And Bear, like, in the opening, Bear, like, gets out of this, like, you know, army helicopter and with his little song, like, "Hey, it's a brand new day." But it's like, and then you see him go up to the door and say he's going to have breakfast with like so-and-so. And then I ad-libbed Bear turning around saying, "It's hot, but it's a dry heat." And then going and going inside. So there were different segments, and one of the segments was Bear and the kid at the breakfast table, and the kid and Bear talking about what the kid likes to eat. And then suddenly the phone rings and we have to stop recording, and the mom answers, and we could hear her say, "Hi, no, I can't talk right now. No, Bear's in the kitchen. Yeah, I'll call you back later." And she was like, I'm so sorry. As soon as I came back, I'm so sorry, that's my husband. And I said, as you know, Bear says, "Your husband who's in Afghanistan right now?" And she said, "Yes." And Bear's like, "Call him back. We'll wait. It's okay. It's fine."
Yeah, Breakfast with Bear is an awesome little show, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Bear in the real world, which is awesome. So now, now you also worked on a knocking series, Ubi, as one of the main characters, Keiko. What was it like working on that?
On the show Ubi, yes.
Yes.
Ubi, this little fever dream of puppetry. This basically, it's basically our bare hands with glass eyes on them.
Yep.
That was the puppets. And they started off as interstitials, little things in between noggin shows. And then it became its own series. And it was myself as Ubi's best friend, Keiko. And Ubi was played by Tim Legasse. Tim's little sister, Uma, was played by Stephanie DeBruzzo. And Grandpa was played by Tyler Bunch.
Yes.
Yep. And then I got to be Keiko, his friend, who wore a little red hat. And Keiko's little catchphrase was, "You, Ubi, friends, perfecto." Mwah. Because they only talked in one or two words at a time. And so, I don't remember her name. However, when you get a chance after this podcast, go to YouTube, type in Ubi history, and this young woman will pop up who is going into not a deep dive. We're talking James Cameron down to the Titanic level of figuring out the sheer logic of this show. It's commendable and frightening at the same time. The thought that goes into it.
I see it.
It's astounding. And I truly encourage you, if you are a fan of Ubi, to check out this young woman's like channel, because it is incredible.
Yeah, Ubi.
Things I never thought of or wanted to think about, but it's like, you know what? She has a point.
Ubi Lord, and this is out of hand.
Literally.
I think that's what the video is talking about.
22 minutes?
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes, yes, 23 minutes.
Yes, yes, Bob. Yes. Yes.
I saw it. Wow, that's great. That's awesome.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So you were also a temporary host for the Sprout Block The Good Night Show, playing Leo the Night Gardener for a very short amount of time. But yes. Could you kind of talk about what that experience was like?
Noggin was this, it was like Sprout.
Yeah.
Was this collaboration, PBS Sprout. So it was like a collaboration between like Sesame Workshop and Nickelodeon, like all these shows are on there. And so Sprout was born somehow. And it was run by Andrew Beecham, who ran the British Playhouse Disney division. And so we got to know each other because I would go over with Bear and make appearances on their morning block of children's shows. They would have these hosts and wraparounds for their block of shows, which included Bear. So Andrew and I got to know each other. So then Andrew came over and he took charge. And for the Good Night Show, the original host was there, and he asked me if I would direct. And I was like, sure, I would love to. So I directed the first season of The Good Night Show. Then the host left, and so they were having another host come But for the interim, for 1 month, they needed a host. And so he asked me, would I be interested? And I said, oh, directing the new host? And he said, no, to be the host. And I was like, oh, because he figured, like, you know, since I was Bear and Bear was a host, I could have that same sort of kind of like persona, but as me. And I was like, okay. So I became Leo, the gardener of sort of like the Sprout Goodnight Show, which was a show that would this wraparounds in the evening from like 6 until 9.
Yeah.
And then it would just, and then it would just repeat. And then it would just repeat because of like the, you know, the time blocks across the country. And you would like, there would be games, there'd be songs, there'd be crafts, there'd be like little stories. And then all the intros to the show, like Thagua, the cat, and
for Nadi,
Dragon Tales, that kind of thing. So it was weird for me because I was playing a human, and so occasionally, and Andrew actually directed me, and so I would see the camera, but I would also see the monitor. So occasionally, I would like look at the monitor. Andrew said, "No, you're looking at the monitor." Because out of habit, I would just like
to go on.
Yeah. So then I got to, I then got a picture of my son who was a baby at the time. And so I taped it to the camera. So this way, whenever I looked at the camera, I could immediately see his face. And so I was like talking to him, which was always my philosophy that it's not a camera. It's actually a kid you're talking to and one who's never seen this show before. So that like, helped a lot. So it was very interesting playing a human being.
There was a puppet, Stacia Newcomb, love Stacia so much.
Yes, she's great. And she played Star, which was kind of a star-shaped pillow. And then there was And then there was a firefly who would like flutter through
Lucy.
Yes. And she would like flutter and like and glow. So also wrote like a lot of the wraparounds as well.
Yeah, you did.
This
intro. That's right.
Yeah. And then I found like the file of it. And so I like uploaded like me singing like the opening and closing song, and people went nuts.
Yeah.
Just like this, like you'd think like the Holy Grail had suddenly been
I have a story about that.
Like what? Bear was on the Sprout?
Exactly.
He was a human on Sprout. Like
A couple years ago, you send me this mysterious package with DVDs, and then you're like, can you do something with this? So it's every episode of that, and you're like, can you convert these for me? So it's basically my fault that
no fault at all. Like, there are Sprout fans who are eternally thanking you for this.
Thank you for that, Bob.
Yes.
Yeah. Just seeing me like do this, it was just like watching again, like it was like, okay, yes, this was an interesting experience. And it's like, and where is Leo now?
Where is he now? Oh well,
where is he now?
Probably still doing things for the garden, but just somewhere else.
Just somewhere else. Just like
maybe a different garden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So now, you inherited the role of a lion and a lion during the last two seasons of PBS series Between the Lions. What went into kind of taking on that character?
Basically, the original puppeteer left, and so they were going
Anthony
back.
Asbury,
into...
Anthony, he's the best.
Yes, and they were going back to do the last two seasons in Jackson, Mississippi. So I auditioned for it. And I got it because Lionel was very much in the vein of Leon from the Puzzle Place, being a little smart aleck, a little cheeky, a little bit of a, you know, a wise guy. And so I just like used that, and it was great. It was a great puppet. Puppets were built by Three Design Studio, which was Jim Krupa's company with his partners, John Orberg and Matthew Stoddard and Kip Rathke. They also did the puppets for Eureka's Castle. So these puppets are gorgeous. Yeah, and it was great. We were down in Jackson for a couple of months, and we did it in Jackson, Mississippi, because to do the last two seasons, they needed funding for PBS shows. And so WGBH, who was the main partner, put up money, but they still needed more money. So then the public television of Jackson, Mississippi, put up Mississippi Public Television, put up the rest, because of the fact that at that time, there was a high level of illiteracy in the state of Mississippi. And they thought that Between the Lions, a proven record of helping kids learn to read, would also help adults learn how to read. And so that's why we went to Jackson, Mississippi, which is a wonderful town. It's wonderful. And I had a great time in Jackson. The people there were great. Stu was wonderful. Yeah, and it was fun. And then I was doing a promotion for my book. I wrote a book called 10 Minute Puppets about how to make puppets in 10 minutes. Yep, and so right, I asked if I could use Lionel for my appearances. I got it. And he said, and Chris Cerf said, sure. So I got Lionel. And then I said, when do you want him back? And he was like, oh, you know, keep them. If I ever need them, I'll let you know. So I have Lionel, like, and Pam Arciero, who was Leona. She has Leona. And Jen Barnhart has Cleo, the mom.
And then Peter
has Theo.
Theo, yeah.
And an Elcher Bunny. He still has an Elcher Bunny, too.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we all have the puppets.
I was kind of wondering about that because I know there's been some things recently with Cleo and Theo, like they've kind of come back. So, and I saw that Lionel was the only one who we haven't really seen any new stuff with in a while. So I was just wondering if that puppet's still around.
Chris had contacted me saying, he's like, you still have Lionel? It's like, of course I still have Lionel. It's like, it's not on eBay. Of course I still have Lionel. So he's going to contact me about like new content. I was like, sure, that's great.
When I met you in person, when we finally met, Lionel, we there. We hung out with Lionel for a little bit.
Oh, yes. That's
great. I didn't know that. Wow, that's
really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, it's like the PBS. Like people know about Bear or Eureka's Castle, but a lot of people don't know about the Puzzle Place, or even like Between the Lions. But the Puzzle Place in particular, because of the fact that Bear and Eureka's Castle being on networks like Nickelodeon and Disney. They were on at specific times. But your local PBS station creates their own schedule. So the Puzzle Place could have been on at 7:30 in the morning before school or 4 o'clock in the afternoon after school. But if it was on...
Or not at all.
Yeah.
But if it was on at 10 o'clock in the morning, you never saw it. So a lot of kids don't know.
Yeah, and Jen kind of talked to us about you know, like where some people didn't watch Between Lines because but other no they know about Winged Rainbow or something but
same reason
where Jen Lily said this that Between Lines the
best kids you've never heard of. Yeah,
exactly. Her words, not ours.
Yes, you're very welcome, Jen. For mentioning that.
We'll pay you royalty soon for that.
Yeah, Between Lines is a wonderful show. You teach lines about reading, you know. It's wonderful.
The theme song's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love that theme. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that show.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Were you gonna say something, Bob?
Are we gonna say that show lasted 10 years? And a lot of people don't know its whole history. The people that I know that watch it stopped at a certain point and didn't even know that it had such a rich history for Between the Lines.
Yeah.
Right.
And the development that went behind it, too, because I remember in the past when we talked to Chris and Norm, and they kind of talked about how it took a couple years for them to really develop the show and get it to what it is.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, people don't realize in terms of, like, children's TV, I mean, any TV, but in particular children's TV, how long it takes. Because, first of all, you have to, like, pitch an idea to the right people who realize, oh, yes, this would be a good idea. And then you just don't start like next week and start like shooting it. You have to go through this development process. And then there's like testing to see if like it actually works.
Yeah.
And then there's setting up a schedule of like shooting and like where to shoot it and like hiring a crew and all of it. And then there's post-production after you got everything together. And so it takes a while for a kid show to get off the ground. So,
yeah. So, going back briefly to your film work, what was it like assisting Raphael in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3?
That was great. It was the third movie. It didn't involve the Jim Henson Company. It had a different company that did it, but using a very similar technology that the Hensons had done, so that it was all remote control. So the heads of the turtles were remote controlled, and I puppeteered the head of Raphael, and then Leo and Donnie and Mikey were puppeteered remotely by Jim Martin, Gordy Robinson, and Rick Lyon.
And, oh, Rick, yes.
Yes. And then inside the turtles were these actors, and I looked out and had Matt Hill, who's an actor.
Love Matt. Love Matt
from
so
Canada.
Much.
Yeah, Matt. Yeah, Matt's my
such
boy.
Such a wonderful guy. Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's great, and he's done voiceover work for the cartoon Eddie.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's great. He's going to be starting doing like Comic-Con conventions, because voiceover actors are like huge now. At Comic-Cons. Yeah. I'm doing Comic-Cons conventions, pop culture conventions again. And the voiceover actors get huge amount
yeah, voice
of people
actors
come
love
to see them.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Amazing.
Kind of start doing yeah. that.
Yeah. Some of the puppeteers, too, because I know Steve Whitmire and Kevin Clash, they've done a lot of those, too.
And you've done some of those, too.
Yep,
yeah.
Yes.
And the people want to take a picture of Bear. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
I have like a little version of Bear as if he got
yeah, like a
dryer.
Smaller version of Bear.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, right. yeah, I did one. I did two last year. I've got another one coming up in September in Orlando Con. So I'm doing that.
Awesome.
And between that, there may be like a couple of others. So just like finding out and like availability and like signing stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. There was one that Matt Hill was at like a couple months ago. In my area, like 2 minutes from my house, he's like, "Can you get Noah to come too?"
At this point, like with Comic Cons now, there's a chance he and I might run into each other, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Your turtle bro for sure.
Yeah. Oh
yeah,
oh, yes,
absolutely.
Yes, yeah. it's you and Matt.
Oh yeah, we hit it off like so well, and I was like so grateful.
That's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yes,
sure, I guess.
Yes.
So now, moving on from puppeteering, you also wrote for some other children's series, including the Magic School Bus, Go-Go Island, and the Cyber Chase. So can you talk about your kind of work doing those in particular?
Yeah, it's like the Magic School Bus and Cyber Chase. They were animated shows, so not puppetry. And the thing about that is with the script, like with like any like puppet show, like with the puzzle plays, you know, interior puzzle plays day, the kids are sitting around the table, like Ben, like, what should we do? Leon's like, I don't know. How about play some checkers? Julie, oh, we did that yesterday. Suddenly, Nuzzle and Sizzle, the dog and cat, race through frame. And so it's basically just like a blueprint of like what the director could then do in terms of like the shots, like what shots do you want to start off with a wide shot and then go to a two shot, or a close-up of them talking, and then a wide shot again. But with animation, the writer actually gets to play the director. So you actually get to not only describe the scene, but describe the shot. So I wrote two scripts for The Magic School Bus, and one was called The Magic School Bus Sees Stars. And it's pretty much like, you know, opening, exterior, school, sunset, camera pushes in as we dissolve to interior, classroom, and blah, 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 overhead shot, panning down. And just like, you have to write out everything. It's because then the animators take this and they do exactly what's written in terms of like close-ups, overhead, panning over, like tighten it, all of that. And so that was what's so incredible about it. And I was like shocked, like, oh my gosh, they actually wrote everything, that they actually animated everything I described, which was wonderful.
Yeah, and Gilligan Island, which you wrote for, is a wonderful show too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only wrote one script for that, but it's the magic show one. And yes, that was fun.
Good one. Yes. Yeah.
I was talking to Leslie about an animated show that you wrote, Leslie, that never got, that never aired. Nate the Great? What was that?
Oh, yeah. So it was a show trying to do an animated version of the kid series Nate the Great, about this kid who was like a detective and solving crimes for his friends. And I wrote for it and it just didn't happen. It's just like, for some reason, it just didn't happen. Leslie did
voices on it. We were talking about it. She was like really excited to see it.
It never happened. So many times, like some of these things, like, you know, it'll get, you know, produced to a point of being like a test for development, and it just didn't work. So
Thank you. She even mentioned that Hugh Martin's wife worked on it too.
Yes, Kristen. Yes, she worked on it. She was a executive producer.
Yes. Yes. So before we wrap up here, I do also want to briefly mention one of your other projects you worked on recently, which is your memoir, Hey, This Was Really Fun, which I love. I have a copy of it right here.
Me too. Thank you. Can I just apologize for everybody who hasn't gotten their copy yet, because here's the thing. Don't ever work with Amazon Publishing. It's like, it's the worst. It's just like, it takes so long getting things published.
I'm publishing right now too.
And it's just like, I'm never doing this again. It's going on a year and I'm still like doing updates. Hey, another shipment just went out. I'm so sorry.
It's a good book. I actually recently finished reading it.
Such an amazing read.
It really is.
And yeah,
thank you. And
to those who are fans of, you know, his work, that, you know, that's been, you know,
and who just want to know more about his life, pick up a copy of it. It's a really good read.
Just do it.
Like Nike does. Just do it.
Yes.
Right. It's on Amazon. Yes. Leave a review. Like, let me know if you liked it or not. This is like, leave a review.
We think it's so amazing.
I would love if there was an audio book too.
Yes. I am working on that with our friend Nate Beagle. Nice. We are working on the audio book. So I've done half of it and I'm about to do the other half. So it will be coming in the future.
Nice.
Awesome. And recently you actually got to do things for a Little Shop of Horrors too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I'm like the swing puppeteer and swing voice now, which is great. I started in October of 2022 and I'm still there. So yep. They still like me.
Wonderful. I've never seen you more comfortable in like a place where you're at. I feel like it's really like a family there.
It's amazing. My joke is if you've ever seen like the Tony Awards, people on stage always mention community, the word community. Theater is such a community. Oh, this community. I'm so proud to be a part of this community. There's nothing like this community. If you did a drinking game every time somebody said community. You would have alcohol poisoning by the time they mentioned Best Musical.
Probably even
But here's
that.
The thing. It is absolutely true. It's like, yes, theater people are amazing because they all know each other. They've all worked together somehow. Off-Broadway, Broadway, regional, touring. They know this person. They know that person. Both on stage, off stage, crews know each other. Producers know each other. In fact, I was talking to one of the actors, and I said, like, you really probably need to have a good reputation because y'all know each other so well. And he said, yeah. And he said, like, he was part of a show where there was a performer who was very gifted, but they could be very difficult at times. So then the show closed and all that. And so at one point, another show was being developed. And what people do is they go to a table, and producers and director and people sit down and they go through, like, who do you think we should contact to go up for this part? And this performer from this particular show's name came up. And somebody at the table had also worked on that show backstage and said, oh no, you don't want this person. And here's why. And pretty much listed the difficulty moments. And that person's name was just tossed aside. So you really have to, like, be the consummate professional. Like, you know, show up on time, leave your baggage at the door, know your lines, and, you know, be respectful and courteous. Because that's what people will hear about. They want people you want to work with. Because, you know, shows, you know, some shows could go on for, you know, years. Little Shop started in the fall of 2019 up until March of 2020. Then something happened. Yeah. And then came back in the fall of 2021. And it's still going. And right now it's going until January of next year. So you really want people you want to work with, not have to work with, especially exactly. with this theater. Yep.
Yeah.
Especially with this theater, because, like, you know, it's very intimate. Like the guys in the girls' dressing room, it's like just one room. And so it's like, you can't, there's hardly room for like seven guys, let alone an ego coming in as well. And so you really do learn to just, like, get along. And, you know, the Seymours that we've had, that I've gotten to know and work with for my time there, Ron McClure, Matt Doyle, Jeremy Jordan, Corbin Blue, and now, you know, Darren Criss, like, these are, like, not only extraordinarily talented guys, but so nice and so easygoing, especially in this very small room.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So as we're about to wrap up here, the last question that Matt here is going to ask is the question we ask all of our guests at the end. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you very much, Chris. This podcast is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of? Or in your own words, how do you define the word nostalgia?
Oh, you're asking me. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. I thought it was a disclaimer.
No.
Telling everybody, he's like,
hey, just in case you missed it at the beginning of the show.
It's called the Nostalgia Show. Yeah. What do you think of when you think of nostalgia? It's like, Bear, what do you think?
Let us know in the comments.
Subscribe and like it. Let us know in the comments.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Exactly. Thank you. It's like, nostalgia, I mean, nostalgia always, for me anyway, always makes me think of something warm and pleasant. Nostalgia, like a bygone time that isn't, like, you know, here anymore. But that's sort of like the weird thing about nostalgia. It's like, you know, what we're having right now is going to be nostalgia at some point. So nostalgia really isn't something in the past. It's something that's always happening. And so you get to contribute to your own nostalgia.
It changes what you get nostalgic for. Like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was like, it's kind of like when my son was really little, walking to school one time, and he said, like, what's time? And I said, oh, it's, you know, it's 8:15, so we won't be late. He's like, no, what is time? And I was like, oh, well, time is three parts. There's the past, the present, and the future. For example, when you just asked me, what is time? That happened in the past. And me telling you right now what is time, that's happening in the present. And us just about to be late for school, that's going to happen in the future.
Oh, man. Yes. Great word send on. Well, Noel, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was a blast.
Thank you, guys. It was great.
Yes,
of course. It was great to see you again. I know
it's always great.
A couple times on Bob's show.
Yeah, it's great meeting you, Noel. And thank you so much.
And special guest, Bob.
DJ yes.
Bob coming on.
Yes. Thank you so much again for what you've done over years to be part of our lives. And I keep up with good work of what you're doing now. And cannot wait what sticks in store for you.
Me too.
Awesome. Yes. Keep in touch with Sesame, especially.
Yes, keep in touch.
Oh, yeah. And
yes, absolutely. We'll keep in touch, and I'll let you know when this goes up.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
Yes.
And everybody out there, thanks for listening.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Enjoy the rest of your day, Noel.
Cheers.
Bye. Cheers.
You too. Bye, Noel. Take care.
Bye. It's goodbye from us as well. We absolutely enjoyed our time speaking with Noel McNeil. Links to his website and his social media will be in the description down below, as well as a link where you can purchase a copy of his memoir.
Yes, and he's also available on Cameo. So you
he's on Cameo as well.
Yes.
You can request if any of your loved ones are personalized from Bear.
Not a paid advertisement.
Yes, for a birthday, anniversary, whatever.
Yes, but keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. Thanks again, Bob, for joining us as always.
Thank you, Bob. It's always great.
Special one. Yes, and as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. See ya. Bye.
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 Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.